Influencers is brought to you by
7Seas. Start your day the right way. Soya Studios, located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road West. ACG Wholesale, with quality service and great prices. The Beauty Barn, hair and beauty supplies, delivering beauty products straight to your door. WhatsApp 242-812-8500. Real Time Sound Studios. And Global Transformation Media, transforming you from the inside out. Welcome to Influencers on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM, and I'm your host, Lady Shima. And on this radio show, we take you into the world of leaders within Bahingian society and the global community to give you insight on how they use their influence to bring about positive change. We provide this platform for influencers to inspire our listeners with their personal stories on how they maneuver and strategize to still be impactful and influential even in this new norm environment post-COVID-19. It is our hope that the stories and insight of the influences we bring to you will inspire you to use the power of your influence to bring about transformational change to your immediate environment, Bahamian society, and for some, even across international divides. And today, we delve into the mind of the first environmental scientist at BRON, a multinational interdisciplinary development consulting group with teams in the Bahamas, Florida, Turks and Caicos Islands, and St. Kitts. She also serves as a project manager at BRON, and her extensive background has also landed her as a graduate research assistant after studying forecast-based disaster preparedness in the Caribbean. And along with her today is an international speaker, best-selling author, hurricane specialist, and educator, and he's a noted meteorologist who has traveled extensively throughout the region and the world, addressing critical issues presented by natural disasters. Today, we welcome influencers, climate ambassador Kelly Armstrong, and meteorologist Wayne Neely, as we discuss the topic, the evolving demands of climate change and sustainability in the Bahamas and the Caribbean. All this and more when we return here on Influencers on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM. Need your picture taken? Well, if you want it to look its best, then go to the best. It's Soya Studios, capturing your special events, portraits, passport, job, and visa photos. Plus, there's more. Also offering professional printing services of business cards, letterheads, signs, and banners. Opened Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's a legacy. 28 years and growing. Located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road. Call 361-7786.
Start your day the right way. 7Seas.
Start your day the right way. Trust in the timeless tradition of 7Seas cod liver oil. 7Seas cod liver oil is a rich natural source of omega-3, giving you the essential nutrients needed to promote good health and help make sure you're looking and feeling your very best. Whether it's one a day, high strength, or traditional, with 7Seas cod liver oil, you start your day the right way.
Start your day the right way with 7Seas.
ACG Wholesale is the answer for retail grocery store owners and everyday shoppers who want to save big. ACG carries a variety of drinks, snacks, meat products, essential dry goods like rice and yellow grits, plus lots of wholesome produce. And ACG Wholesale is a proud distributor of Borden's Milk. Opened Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located next to Phoenix Supermarkets on East Street South. Call 392-1155. That's ACG Wholesale with quality service and great prices. Welcome back to Influencers, and I'm your host, Lady Shima. And with me today are influencers, climate ambassador Kelly Armstrong and meteorologist Wayne Neely, as we discuss the topic, the evolving demands of climate change and sustainability in the Bahamas and the Caribbean. Welcome to Influencers.
Thank you, Lady Shima.
It's great to have you both. We were supposed to have had this conversation for a bit now, but I believe that the timing is perfect.
Absolutely.
Pre-show, we were talking about what's going on in the Bahamas and talking about the significant impact of climate change. Mr. Meteorologist, forecaster Wayne Neely, yes, you were telling me that we are experiencing near a drought in the Bahamas. What's going on with that?
The rainfall is significantly below average, and hoping with the We've had normally we have a rainy season begins in April and May, but this year we're having a reduced amount of rainfall in those 2 months. And basically for the year we've only had two strong heavy spells of rain, and so most of the islands in the Bahamas now are below rainfall average.
Mm-hmm. And how is this going to impact what it is that we see as it relates to the frequency and the severity of the kinds of storms that we've been experiencing lately, like a Dorian, for example?
Well, in some ways it's good, in some ways it's bad, because first of all, in terms of hurricanes, for example, if you have a lot of rainfall, that's bad, because if a hurricane should pass over your area and the ground is saturated, that means you're going to have significant more flood damage in low-lying areas. And you also it also impacts the rainfall patterns as well in terms of drought. So that means the normal rainfall pattern is not functioning. And some people blame it on climate change.
Now, I'm going to bounce the conversation to you, Ms. Kelly Armstrong. And you are a climate ambassador at Braun. And talk to us a little bit first before we even go deeper into this conversation about sustainability and the impact of climate change here in the Bahamas. Talk to us a bit about the organization Braun. People would hear about it. What is it about exactly? What is it that you do?
Sure. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So Braun Limited is a development consulting firm, and we operate in several different technical capacities. We have professional engineers, professional environmental scientists, and architects, and other professionals. So if you are developing a project in the Bahamas, we would be your go-to people. Recently, the Department of Environmental Planning and Protection now requires a certificate of environmental clearance for all development projects in the Bahamas. So that is something very significant, and that is put forward in law now. So if you have a development project, you absolutely need to go through the Department of Environmental Planning Protection to ensure that you meet their standards. And so that is something that we take care of from your project from inception to completion. We do the environmental studies. A lot of people are now familiar with the famous environmental impact assessment that a lot of these large infrastructure projects are required to have. So if your development is on that scale, then certainly you would need a certificate of environmental clearance and some supplemental studies. If it is a smaller development, then you perhaps would get, you know, you perhaps won't need those supplemental studies. But again, this is something that you need. So if that is, you know, something that you are undertaking, then by all means, please contact us at Braun and we will get you sorted.
Okay, what is the demand like for that kind of a type service now, particularly with the larger developments? And specifically here in New Providence.
Oh, for sure. So there's actually a lot going on in New Providence. If you take a drive around town, you'll see a lot of forest being cleared, right? Even as you drive along West Bay Street, you see new developments pop up, it seems like, almost every month, right?
Yes.
So all of those projects require certificates of environmental clearance if they are new projects. So, for example, you wouldn't need a certificate of environmental clearance if you're renovating your home or expanding your business, per se, but especially if there's some significant or special environmental considerations that need to be taken, because, for example, the Department of Forestry has also recently expanded their list of protected trees, right? Some of our fruit-bearing trees are now protected, right? So if you would need a special permit to remove those trees if, you know, they don't quite fit in your plans. So just to be safe, it's great. It's best for you to call the department. And if you find that you need a consultant, you can contact us.
What would you say is the impact? And I'm talking about a negative or destructive impact when it comes to major developments, especially in the coastal line. And, you know, dealing with small islands like New Providence, for example. I was talking to you and Wayne a little bit earlier about my own personal experience driving out west. And I was going to pick up a product. And I called a lady and I was like, are you aware that this road is impassable? And she's like, oh, it's impassable today, huh? And it was just, you know, a normal, everyday, ordinary occurrence, you know, for her, because she's accustomed to, you know, being in that area because that's where she lives. And I said, oh, my God, when did this start happening? That you're trying to drive on West Bay Street going towards the Gembe area, and literally the ocean is on the road on a regular, normal day. And so what does this say now for coastal decline?
Well, what that means basically means that we feel the effect, we feel the effects of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And what if there's a forecast, the forecasting that with climate change, we expect the sea level to rise between 1 and 3 feet.
Okay.
So what you're saying now is that because sea level is rising,
mm-hmm.
that means there's the water table itself actually rises as well. So that means that if you have rainfall events, or if you need ocean, you need water, the water is going to take less water to saturate the ground. So what you're going to have is flooding in low-lying areas. And the areas that never used to flood, for example, I can tell you an example. Near Commonwealth Bank on East Bay Street, that never used to flood significantly. But you also have almost near where they have the point. That was an area that never used to flood. And after they built that there, we can now, during a heavy rainfall event, that floods. And so you can imagine with a hurricane.
You said after that was built?
Mm-hmm. Yes, after it was built.
Yeah, so what after about this impact study that you were talking about just now, Kelly?
Right. So
as it relates to those types of developments.
So, yes, the point would have required an environmental impact assessment that would have been submitted to the Department of Environmental Planning and Protection. And sometimes the flood issues can be as simple as because the development in that area is now expanded, you now have an increase of impermeable surfaces, which the rain would usually percolate down into the ground and then back into, of course, the freshwater lands. Mm-hmm. So now that you've expanded the development, there's an increase of impermeable surfaces. So, for example, you have less grass and more concrete. Right?
Yeah.
So there's less area for that rain
for the water to be absorbed.
In. Right, correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so what needs to happen in order to come against this or to fight against what it is that we're seeing now with the flooding that's happening as a result of the major developments that we're talking about right now?
So some of the practical things that we can do are actually quite simple, and we just need to do them a little bit more consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So prior to Hurricane Matthew, for example, there was an exercise where some private contractors were hired by the government to clean the drains.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that we don't have on a regular maintenance schedule that really should be. So just clearing debris from the drains, if you think about it, if you think about all of the trash that we, you know, we litter all the time. And then also just natural debris like, you know, the twigs and leaves and things that would get caught up in the drains and allow the water not to get into that space and off of the road so that we can have, you know, a clear road. Clean the drains. Just clean the drains. Put them on a regular maintenance schedule. That would help a great deal.
What and this question is for either one of you. What is the organization that is responsible for oversight with what it is that you just described right now? Just something that is as basic as that, but that's bringing about such a tremendous positive change as it relates to possible flooding.
That's a good question. I'm not sure if it would be the Ministry of Works
Clean the drains.
Yeah, that they do some fair bit of cleaning, especially when they're implementing new drainage, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have to do that in order to test them, their capacity properly, to ensure that they're working properly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think the issue is that we need to do it on a regular, we need to have the drain cleaning on a regular maintenance schedule all around the islands.
Typically, normally, as of recent, they started before the hurricane season started to clean those drains. So that's a good sign, and that would prevent flooding in certain select areas of New Providence.
Okay, I was listening to a conference recently about SIDS, Small Island Developing States, and they were talking about, you know, the concern as it relates to rising sea levels and talking about the kind of contribution that the World Bank was organizing itself to give to SIDS, Small Island Developing States, that are increasing in vulnerability to, you know, natural disasters. I mean, look at what it is that we've experienced with Dorian, with maximum sustained winds. It was, what, 185?
Yes, we're gusting to 20.
Yeah, and it set a record, right?
Yeah, set a record. It's the second strongest hurricane in the region. That's tied with the Great Lake, but the hurricane is number two in terms of strongest in terms of strength.
Okay. Speed. Okay, so now let's have a little bit of a proactive conversation now, you know, because we tend to be really reactive, you know, unfortunately, here in the Bahamas when it comes to this type of an issue and circumstance particularly. And so, you know, from your experience, Kelly, I'm going to start with you. You spoke about Sidima and you spoke about Karakoff. I want to start off with Karakoff. Let's talk about, break down that acronym for me. And talk about some of the recent discussions that you all have been having as it relates to what's going on with SIDS?
Sure. So CARICOF stands, or rather is an abbreviation for Caribbean Climate Outlook Forum.
Mm-hmm.
And the Caribbean Climate Outlook Forum is essentially the group of meteorologists that mm-hmm. come together from national meteorological services all across the Caribbean
okay.
to produce the regional forecast. And they do that twice a year. They mm-hmm. produce a regional forecast for the wet season as well as for the dry season.
Okay.
So the output of that conference would be a regional forecast, wet forecast and a regional dry forecast.
Mm-hmm.
So the last 2 days of that convention, they actually invite disaster managers for a workshop to discuss the forecast and to discuss the anticipated impacts of that forecast so they can all plan together. The disaster managers in that conference are not just from the National Emergency Management Agencies. They're not just from NEMA. They're actually representatives from each ministry. So
okay.
you will have representatives from the Ministry of Tourism,
mm-hmm.
the Ministry of Health, the Ministry
That's
of
good.
Environment,
mm-hmm.
the Ministry of Works, or your, you know, some of the other utility companies, public and private, would also be invited.
Mm-hmm.
And even some significant private stakeholders will also be invited. So they will come together to discuss how they will respond to this regional forecast in anticipation of the impacts.
Mm-hmm.
What CDEMA is responsible for, CDEMA stands for the Caribbean Disaster Emergency Management Agency.
Mm-hmm.
So CDEMA is essentially the regional body in which all of the national emergency management agencies across the Caribbean refer to.
Okay.
So they are part of. And again, mm-hmm. this is another CARICOM-based mm-hmm. organization.
Okay.
So CDEMA essentially provides support that's mm-hmm. needed to help all of the various NEMAs in other Caribbean countries mm-hmm. prepare for any impending disasters or storms mm-hmm. or hurricanes that they think they will suffer significant impacts from. Right?
Okay.
As well as they help to organize some of the relief activities.
Mm-hmm.
So they have activities and responsibilities across the disaster management phases.
Okay.
So they have responsibilities in preparedness as well as responsibilities in response. Mm-hmm. So for example, when you do have a country that has significant impacts from a storm or a hurricane, they will be the ones to organize help from other Caribbean countries in order to help
okay.
the country you know, get mm-hmm. become rehabilitated. So you have other organizations that have an association of, you know, Caribbean electrical workers, for example.
Okay.
I think the acronym is CARELEC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So they would organize CARELEC to come in and help make sure that, you know, the power is restored in a country that's been impacted, for example.
Okay.
So that is the kind of activities that CDEMA does.
Mm-hmm.
One of the recent conferences that they had, I think it was about maybe 5 years ago now, in Nassau, they actually signed a memorandum of understanding with Tropical Shipping Company.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why that was so significant is because if you think about it, Tropical Shipping Company actually has a large volume of shipping business in the region.
Mm-hmm.
They are one of the primary actors or stakeholders in our supply chain when we are getting supplies from Florida to other countries in the Caribbean, including the Bahamas. So having that memorandum of understanding, especially in time of disaster, to understand that they will prioritize any disaster relief supplies in mm-hmm. terms of getting them from Florida or maybe even further away in the United States from the United States into the Caribbean, into the Bahamas in times of need was very critical. And
okay.
I'm glad that we've established that now, because those are the types of things that we need to continue doing moving forward, understanding that the need will continue to increase.
Most definitely, you know. And let me swing the conversation over to Wayne. Of course, you've traveled, internationally and on an extensive level at that. And I call you the hurricane specialist expert, okay? And of course, we've never seen what it is that we've seen here that we saw here in Grand Bahama and Abaco,
yes.
as it relates to Dorian. What are some of the specific changes that have been made as it relates to the body of meteorologists here in the country in order to facilitate, you know, hopefully it does not happen again, right?
Yes.
But, you know, disaster preparedness. And just thinking about the horror, you know, of possibly a Dorian making landfall here in New Providence.
Yeah.
So what are some of the lessons that you all have learned as a meteorologist and some of the changes that have been established in order to circumvent or to come against what we may experience
One of the things that they did, the National Hurricane Center and the World Meteor Organization, they, for example, we had a warning system. And whenever there's a four-tier warning system, we have a hurricane alert, which is when the storm is 60 hours away. You also have a hurricane watch, which is when it's 48 hours away. And a hurricane warning is 36 hours. Prior to about several years back, and they realized that those warnings, they were first, a warning was 24 hours and a watch was 36 hours.
Okay.
So what they did, they gave them additional time so that people can prepare significantly more earlier than they do, because they realized that in most cases, well, actually what caused it, because when they had major hurricanes like Andrew and those in the United States, when they were preparing for the warnings, they realized many persons were caught on the highways and they experienced the storm in their cars. And to prevent that, not only in the United States, but locally and in the region as well. So to prevent that, they gave you an additional time to prepare. And because technically what I found out is that Bahamians, especially Bahamians, they wait until the last minute. They won't prepare.
Right.
They're not proactive. They're not, they don't take the, right. For me, what I do is during the year, I start collecting cans, let's say tuna, corn beef, or what have you. And ahead of time, if you go shopping,
so it could be more manageable, even financially,
And now it is, what did Bahamians wait until the last minute to go rush to the food stores? And people panic. And when you rush to the food, you panic. And that could create a problem. In fact, another thing that they did with Hurricane Matthew of 2016, Hurricane Matthew, when I was going to work, I passed like about four gas stations after Hurricane Matthew. And I saw long lines, perhaps hundreds on each line. And they were waiting to get gas. Apparently someone spread a rumor that they were running out of gas. But nowadays, and what happened with that, people had to be on line to just get gas, even though it was a false alarm. And people were waiting until the last minute. And just before the storm, what they did now with the latest storm, Isaias and Irma and those, they went ahead of time and pumped, get their gas, so there won't be that long line after the hurricane has dissipated.
Yeah, that's a good change. You spoke about now more time being given. So can you actually give me the specifics on that? What it was and what it is now?
A hurricane warning. First of all, you have an alert. The alert hasn't changed. The alert is assigned basically only to the Bahamas.
Okay.
We have a four-tier system. That region has a three-tier warning system.
Okay.
You have a hurricane alert, which is when the storm is 60 hours away. And that's when you start getting alert from the Bahamas meteorology.
Okay.
And a hurricane watch is 48 hours away. Initially, a hurricane watch was 36 hours away.
Okay.
And a hurricane warning.
So 4 hours there.
Yeah. A hurricane warning was 24 hours away. Now it's 36 hours away. So that gives you a leeway of 6 additional hours to prepare. And I can give you an example with walking. I went and interviewed persons in Crooked Island.
Okay.
And the warnings were given, I think, in my thing, they were given a bit late. And many of them, the storm came in at 8 o'clock and at 8 p.m. and they were battening their house down at 6 p.m. That's the problem that you're facing, and that's dangerous, because, for example, in Hurricane Sandy of 2012, a guy, Timothy Smith from Delta Bank, he went during the storm. A shutter became loose. He went during the storm when the storm had just started, and a gust of wind blew him off the second floor, and he was killed instantly. So things like that, you should prepare ahead of time, rather than wait until the storm is on you to prepare, make warning. And that goes for food items, that goes for your flashlight, generator, or anything else.
Of course, of course. You know, and I really saw it as being necessary to, you know, have this conversation right now. Of course, hurricane season starting June 1st here ending November 30th. And just really looking at the casual nonchalant kind of attitude, really, towards the season by, you know, a good number of the populace, unfortunately. And I wanted to ask you now, let's just say that, and God forbid, that there is to be a Dorian in the future.
In New Providence.
To come to New Providence. What specific changes, preparedness, do we actually have in place right now as we speak, right now as we're having this conversation, in order to mitigate the kind of extensive damage that obviously would be experienced here? Yeah. And I'm talking about post-Dorian, after walking through that experience.
Well, first of all, Dorian taught me, and taught the Bahamian people a lot. And I said, behind every hurricane, there's a silver lining, and Dorian was one. When Dorian struck Abaco and Grand Bahama, you saw people on their WhatsApp, people were sending messages from Abaco to persons, their family members around the Bahamas. And that's one thing, that's a good thing, because that shows you that everyone now sees what a Category 5 hurricane can do to an area. And it devastated Marsh Harbor. Most of the homes in Abaco, Marsh Harbor was destroyed. Most of the homes on the Keys were destroyed. And so it shows you what the potential for major hurricane to have on an area, impact on an area.
Yes, Kelly?
Yes, I'm also grateful for those lessons, and that, you know, persons were able to share all of those communications, whether they be pictures, videos, etc. Because it was so important for us to understand and to learn from that experience. And when we think about the impacts and how we can possibly prepare for them in New Providence, understanding what Abaconians and Grand Bahamians went through, I think we have learned that we need to take evacuation orders very seriously. So the Prime Minister had made an urgent plea for persons to evacuate from areas in Grand Bahama and in Abaco 24 hours and prior to landfall. And while I understand, you know, the idea that some people, you know, they prefer the comfort and security of their homes, but if you are not aware of the stability of your structure, you know, that it's confidence true. Could be false, right? It could be providing a false sense of security.
Yes.
And even if you are aware that your home may not be in the best shape, and you just sort of, you know, there's a sense of, you know, I just want to be present. If anything goes wrong, I can probably fix it right away. It won't be that bad. Like, let's understand what a major storm can do. We understand that now, and you understand that your home is not in a position, probably not in the best position to withstand a major storm. Please go and seek more secure shelter. Even if you do not have this type of support system where, you know, you can go to a family member or a close friend. Again, there's a list of shelters that are deemed to be have, you know, sufficient structural integrity to withstand certain storms. They are identified with a complete listing at, you know, when at the start of the hurricane season every year for every island. Please identify which one is closest to you, because in the event that you determine too late that you cannot, you know, ride out the storm at home and you need to evacuate to a shelter, you need to know exactly where to go, because again, time is of the essence, right? We don't want you out in the middle of the storm putting your life at risk. Debris is flying around. Most Bahamians can't swim, so God forbid, you know, the flood levels
are high. And that's
something
that needs to change.
Right. Yes. And so, again, you know, when we think about this as well, like, in the process of evacuation, have that bag packed with all of your important documents, anything critical for your survival within the next 2 days at least, you know. Have a ball of water in there. Have, you know, if you have something like a pocket knife or something of the sort, a tool, you never know. You know, you could be walking to the shelter in flood waters. Your clothes can get snagged on something. You might have to cut yourself loose. You know, you just never know, right? You might be in the rafters in your ceiling, and you know, the flood levels are rising there. You might need to pick your way out, you know, through the roof, you know. So you need a sharp object, a sharp tool to assist you, you know. For those of us who can't swim, please, please have some sort of flotation device available. It can be a simple light vest as you would typically wear on a boat ride somewhere.
Learn how to swim.
But please have it available. True. And yes, please learn how to swim. Now, granted, you won't learn most life-saving techniques for sort of like that disaster situation in like a swimming pool if you go to like a typical swimming class. But if you go to the ocean and you learn a little bit about water rescue, for example, when I was a teenager, I was exposed to water rescue certification. And it was part of an extension of my first aid certification. So these types of training are available if you're interested. They teach you, for example, if you're on the ocean, how to swim, you know, with the current and not against it so that you don't drown, right? So things like this are essentially critical, especially if you live on a family island, because the resources are not the amount of resources that we have available in New Providence, it's no secret, you know, they're not all available to our family island. So these are the things that you really need to think critically about and take very, very seriously.
What I experienced with, I just finished writing a book on Dorian, and I went to Abaco and interviewed those persons who experienced the storm. One of them I just interviewed was a guy named William Davis. He decided that he would not weather the storm in his house, but he went to his store in Marsh Harbor, and he said the water came to the second level, and he said he barely lost, he almost lost his life, and they had the people in the pigeon pee and mud. I interviewed the police officer who went with them, Mr. Henfield, Member of Parliament for North Abaco, and they went there and they took interpreters and they took and they went to each house. They also had a meeting on the park, and they instructed them, say, look, a storm is coming. They say it's going to be 21 feet. And he said, okay, we're going to leave. And he said about 95% of those persons who promised them that they would leave, some said they would leave in 5-10 minutes, next said they would leave in 15-20 minutes, they end up staying. And many of those persons lost their lives. Because and the problem that you have is that you don't, you have a population, Bahamian population, with very little hurricane experience. And the only way you can experience a hurricane is if, the only way you would get the hurricane knowledge is if you experience a major hurricane. And with Andrew of 92, we've had, for the last 25 years, we haven't had any major storms other than the recent ones to impact, especially in New Providence. And in March of 2016, you had, the storm came from the south. And the warnings went out from the Department of Meteorology for those persons in the southern area, southern New Providence, to move to higher land, to higher ground. And many of them stayed. This, you know, most people feel comfortable in their homes.
They don't, That's true.
Yeah, they don't look at the danger. They have no hurricane experience. They don't know, like, say, what a storm surge is. And people think that when there's a 5-foot storm surge, it's just going to be a little calm water. But there's actually a current in the, in the floodwaters as well. And in Machu, many of those persons stayed. And one of those persons was my cousin, him, his wife, and his little daughter. And he said, I told him to leave. He went back home and started to pack his wife. His wife told him, no, we'll weather the storm. And they did. And eventually what happened is that during the peak of the storm, the water came up 6 feet in his house.
Oh, my goodness.
And those houses on Salt Beach that you drive to the end of Salt Beach, most of those houses, the water levels above the wind, the top windowsill. So what you had is that about, you had many of those persons were caught in the storm, in the flood waters. And I think one good thing that happened was that the storm occurred during the day, during the morning, so they could see. And they also, what happened is that the commissioner of police at the time, who was Ellison Grangelade, and Deputy Commissioner Leon Battle, they decided, even the calls were so great, a significant amount of people calling, said, look, we need to be rescued. The water's to our rafters, and we on top of the roof. And so he decided, and typically the police don't send people out, but they made the decision to send a dump truck and a backhoe, and a backhoe to South Beach. And what did they do? They rescued 500 to 600 persons. And I think if they had not done that, if they had not done that would have been, I'm sure there could have been fatalities in March.
Yes, most definitely.
So these warnings, seems like, and with that experience, those persons in South Beach, I can guarantee you, they're not going to stay in the water no more. And it's the same thing with Andrew, with the people in Spanish Wells. Whenever they go to sea for fishing, prior to Andrew of 92, they would just go. But now, when it, before they go, now they put the storm shutters up and prepare everything in case any event that a storm comes. And because when Andrew struck, Many of them were still on the waters. They had to rush back home. By the time they got home, the hurricane was already upon, and it devastated Spanish Well and North Eleuterio. So experiencing a major storm.
Yes.
We don't have that experience, many Bahamians. Mm-hmm. But over time, and with climate change, where you have more frequent, intense hurricanes, the record shows in the last 20 years, you've had more intense hurricanes of Category 3 and higher.
Mm-hmm.
And most people forecast that those type of storms are going to increase over the next 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the storms are going to come. So it's just for us to find ways to mitigate the damages caused by these storms.
Mm-hmm. And therein lies the need for us to have more conversations such as this one, you know, a proactive and very insightful conversation concerning disaster preparedness. You're listening into Influencers here on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Lady Shima. Sitting in with me, Influencers Climate Ambassador Kelly Armstrong, along with the meteorologist Wayne Neely, and we are having a discussion on the topic, the evolving demands of climate change and sustainability in the Bahamas and the Caribbean. We're going to have more on the other side of this break. Please stay tuned. Need your picture taken? Well, if you want it to look its best, then go to the best. It's Sawyer Studios, capturing your special events, portraits, passport, job, and visa photos. Plus, there's more. Also offering professional printing services of business cards, letterheads, signs, and banners. Opened Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's a legacy. 28 years and growing. Located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road. Call 361-7786.
Start your day the right way with 7Cs.
Start your day the right way. Trust in the timeless tradition of 7Cs Cod Liver Oil. 7Cs Cod Liver Oil is a rich, natural source of omega-3, giving you the essential nutrients needed to promote good health and help make sure you're looking and feeling your very best. Whether it's one a day, high strength, or traditional, with 7Cs Cod Liver Oil, you start your day the right way.
Start your day the right way with 7Cs.
ACG Wholesale is the answer for retail grocery store owners and everyday shoppers who want to save big. ACG carries a variety of drinks, snacks, meat products, essential dry goods like rice and yellow grits, plus lots of wholesome produce. And ACG Wholesale is a proud distributor of Borden's Milk. Opened Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located next to Phoenix Supermarkets on East Street South. Call 392-1155. That's ACG Wholesale with quality service and great prices.
Welcome back to Influencers, and I'm your host, Lady Shima, and with me today are Influencers Ambassador, Climate Ambassador, she is, Kelly Armstrong, along with forecaster, meteorologist, Wayne Neely, and we are having a proactive discussion today on the topic, the evolving demands of climate change and sustainability in the Bahamas and the Caribbean. And right before we went to break, Wayne, we were talking you were talking to us, rather,
yeah,
about some of these eyewitness accounts,
yes,
that persons have had as a result of literally experiencing being in that storm, Dorian,
yes,
that monster of a storm. And so much rich history and information,
yes,
that is needed, especially for this up-and-coming generation, and understanding the extreme danger when it comes to a lack of disaster preparedness, right?
Yes.
And I said to you, I said, you know, Wayne, it's great to have books,
yeah,
but when it comes, yeah, especially when it comes to millennials, right? Not all of them. Listen, let's get this right. But, you know, they tend to be more into videos, right?
Yes.
That tends to draw their attention more. And so I was suggesting to you about the same information that you have in the books.
Yes.
I mean, very, very, very rich, needed information to just change your modality a bit and then also incorporate possibly having it like a YouTube channel, right?
Yes.
Because there's just so much rich information,
yes,
that you, yeah, right. And even when they're doing research in school, they,
yes,
should be able to go to YouTube or to a website,
yeah,
and to be able to pull up these first account stories,
yeah,
and be able to use them as references, right? And I see even as a teacher that that is something that tends to present a bit of challenge when it comes to doing research in the Bahamas.
Yes.
Not research in the Bahamas, I don't want to say it like that. When it comes to doing research on Bahamian events,
yes.
Being able to go into the internet and being able to pull the information, especially with those events that are more recent and even historical events. We're going all the way back to the 1940s, 50s and dealing with the history of hurricanes, right?
Yes.
And so you said that this is something that you're going to probably get working on,
I'm
Wayne?
Working on, yes, I'm working on that. I'm also working on a website. And with that, I'm going to put what I call personal recollections from persons who experienced storms.
Yes.
From 1866.
That would be
so
awesome.
I'm going to be adding, mm-hmm. I'm going to be adding those to the mm-hmm. channel and also to the webpage.
That's awesome, Wayne.
Excited
you know, because,
for that.
Yes.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. I don't just write these books. I write these books so that people can learn from them.
Yes.
And if they see that, for example, in Hurricane Wilma of 2005, there was a lady. Same thing. The police went to this person's house,
mm-hmm.
and they asked them to evacuate. Most persons did. Some mm-hmm. didn't. Say they were going to stay in their homes, and they left. And the police went back there with orders from the commissioner of police to go and evacuate them, and move. Mm-hmm. And some more moved. And mm-hmm. then the former member of parliament, Obi Wilscombe, went with them also and told them to evacuate. And many of the persons said they didn't. Well, there was one lady who was there, and she stayed with her family. And mm-hmm. the water from the storm surge, flooded the entire house, and it washed the baby out of the uncle's hand, and the baby died.
Mm.
They had to rush out of the house because the water was up to over 6 feet. Mm-hmm. So, and if people can hear this, that kind of story, it would dawn on them not to stay in their homes in a
yes.
low-lying area or that's impacted by
yes.
storms. And in Grand Bahama, I've interviewed for Dorian.
Mm-hmm.
Many persons, and one of them, I spoke to others in Grand Bahama. There are certain places that never flooded. There's a gentleman, Tim Allen, who was a photographer for the Tribune now with the Associated Press.
Mm-hmm.
Him and his family were in his house. The water came up over 5 feet, 5 to 6 feet. And he had to rush, they had to rush out of there
mm-hmm.
And into the storm, in the middle of the storm. With
right,
no strong
I understand, yes, yes.
So it's things like that. And typically, he said he lives in an area called Arden Forest.
Mm-hmm.
He said typically that area doesn't flood. And most persons in Grand Bahama said there were certain areas that they never flooded, not even during a rainfall event.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly those areas flooded. It also what also exacerbated the problem was that the storm struck at king tide, which means that the water level is already high.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took very little water to saturate
on top
into
of the extreme rainfall.
Permeated
yes.
the ground. And,
yeah.
and so which happened, instead of going into the ground,
mm-hmm.
you now had flooding. So you had 5-6 feet of flood waters. And some persons,
oh
yeah.
mm-hmm. yes, yes.
Because I, sorry, if I can expand, Lady,
please
I
go
think
ahead.
When most people think about tide, right,
mm-hmm.
and Wayne sort of alluded to it a little bit, they don't necessarily consider the groundwater level, right? They
mm-hmm.
normally only think of high tide
That's
as the
true.
Coast,
yeah.
as the coastline, like
yes.
the tide. And if you live away from the coast, it may be a little bit out of your mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when you have those astronomical high tides, that also means the groundwater level is also at high tide,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's also closer to the surface, which is why your flood risk has also increased even further inland, even
yes.
if you live away from the coast.
Okay. I mean, thank you for that insight. You know, and that's the very, very, very serious thing. And it lends to the experience that I had, you know, because I don't live, you know,
yeah.
coastal area. So that was very... you know, untowards for me, you
yes.
know, a very strange experience. It was like a phenomenon for me,
yeah.
right? Because there I was on the phone, totally losing my mind. And
yeah.
she was so calm. She was like, yes, this happens all the time. We just go the other way, you know?
Yeah.
But then I started to think, though, I mean, even thinking about structural engineers, right?
Yeah.
And what can be done, though, to help to mitigate when it comes to flooding in the coastal areas and dealing with hurricane preparedness.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
So we're actually in the process right now, and it's been a process that was initiated even prior to Hurricane Dorian of updating our building code, understanding
mm-hmm.
that there are some, like we've been talking about, there are some lessons learned
mm-hmm.
that need to be applied even in some of our standards. Now,
mm-hmm.
and we actually do already have one of the strongest building codes in the region.
We do.
Right?
Yes.
Florida's building code was actually prepared from our, mm-hmm. with insights from our building code right here in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. So updating that and being consistent with that information and making sure we consistently apply all of the lessons learned from all of our mm-hmm. experiences with extreme events, not yes. just hurricanes, but other weather events, mm-hmm. and continue to apply those to our standards, I think we're heading in a good direction there. Mm-hmm. In terms of other lessons, for example, structural responses may not always be the answer. So, for example, it seems like almost a, I guess, a not really an easy response, but sort of a natural response. And it's funny that I use that word, to like put up a seawall if we see that, you know, the coastline somewhere is at risk, or some other sort of, you know, revetment, some sort of structural infrastructure to help yes. protect us from mm-hmm. the waves yeah. and from the surge. But in some cases, a natural response, a green response, a mixture of green and what we call gray or concrete infrastructure may actually be better for the environment. We understand mm-hmm. that with climate change, these disasters and these risks and vulnerabilities will continue to be amplified, right, mm-hmm. over time. So why don't we give ourselves that time now to plant more trees on the coastline that okay. will act as a natural buffer mm-hmm. To build up the
That's
soil.
That's an example of a green response.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Build up the soil, build up the sediment in those areas, right? Mm-hmm. Build up the dune infrastructure on the beach and other coastlines mm-hmm. that will provide a natural buffer against some of those waves and winds that will absorb some of that energy. And again, it's easier to replace. So if you think, for an example, if you build a seawall and in the case of New Providence, a lot of our roads are right up along the seawall, especially, mm-hmm. the, you know, West Bay Street, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
If that seawall is impacted, and we've seen that in recent hurricanes past, especially by the Caves area,
yeah.
when we have the seawall impacted, that immediately impacts the road infrastructure as well. So now mm-hmm. we have to repair the seawall and the road, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you have a more natural vegetative buffer there
mm-hmm.
and the trees get destroyed, then, you know, that's a huge difference in terms of finances, right, that the mm-hmm. government has
yes,
to find
yes,
now, right?
Yes.
We can possibly
mm-hmm.
even transplant trees from another forested area back to the beach.
Okay.
Or, you know, even if we have to buy trees to replant in that area, that's a response that we can even get the community engaged in,
good
right?
Work,
as
yes.
opposed to hiring some consultants to figure out what now can we do? Because let's say that was a Category 3 storm that impacted the road infrastructure and the seawall in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're expecting, you know, climate change to increase these hazards, the intensity of these hazards. So now
mm-hmm.
they have to come up with, you know, more stringent structural standards.
Yes.
So that these roads can continue to, you know, withstand nature. But you can fight nature with nature.
That's a really, really good point. Let's talk more so specifically about that, though. I want us to talk a little bit about some of the policy changes that have been enacted now as a direct result of experiencing the monster storm called Hurricane Dorian here in the Bahamas. What are some of those policy amendments, changes, regulations that have now been enacted and put in place in order to mitigate against further damage should we see another monster storm close to that of Hurricane Dorian?
Well, one thing I think they have to reevaluate the hurricane shelters, because
mm-hmm.
From my experience
oh,
with
most
Dorian,
definitely, yes.
From my experience with Dorian, many mm-hmm. those shelters, people went to those shelters and they were compromised, so they had to took it upon themselves and risked their lives to go in the middle of the storm to escape that building that was compromised with either flood waters or the winds blew the roof off.
Yes.
So things like that you have to reevaluate and find out where, and look back at the storm shelters that you have now, reevaluate them and determine where it's safe based on Dorian, to see whether they are capable of surviving future storms like Dorian.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this with your meteorologist hat on, Wayne
yeah.
Neely. And that is, are you, based on the information that you have, in expectation of the possibility of storms coming here to the Bahamas that's going to rival the strength of and the severity of Dorian in the future?
Well, I think you're gonna have more storms like Dorian. And,
we will.
Yeah,
is what you're saying?
Yes, we will definitely. What happened now is because the seas are warmer, and with Dorian, the sea level, the sea level, sea our surface temperatures were about 2 degrees Celsius with above normal. And it doesn't seem like much, but for a hurricane, that's rocket fuel. And you also have a more warm, because of climate change, you have a more moist atmosphere. With moist atmosphere, it gives you more rainfall, so it results in more flooding. And from the rainfall events, and exacerbated by the storm surge itself, so you have more you're gonna have potential more intense hurricanes. Mm-hmm. So which means that, and the thing that will impact us, especially in New Providence, is that most people live along the coast. For us, mm-hmm. living along the coast is like you've made it. Mm-hmm. Most people, and they put multi-million-dollar houses, thousands of dollars,
mm-hmm.
into these homes. And with one hurricane coming, wipes it out.
Just destroy it.
So uh-huh. what you're going to see now is you're going to have more in terms of damage total. Andrew was $250 million. And at that time, that was considered a lot. And we had Matthew was $600 million.
Mm-hmm.
Abaco and Grand Mahamo experienced Dorian. Only those two islands, mostly, to a great extent. And $3.4 billion.
That's right.
And it seems like a lot now, but I guarantee in 10 years, you're going to have much more expensive storm, especially if it hits Nassau and Grand Bahama.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the structural integrity of the hurricane shelters, have the necessary policies, regulations been put in place as a result of what it is that we've experienced with Dorian, since Dorian?
So the standards are there, right? The standards are definitely there. And the structural inspections are happening, right?
I'm talking about them being made more stringent as a result of what it
right.
is that we experienced from Dorian.
Again, like I mentioned before, our building code was actually like sufficient, right? I think the issue that we see in a lot of places is people don't comply with the building code.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
They especially don't comply with the building code, especially in the Family Islands, yes, where you don't have the capacity in terms of numbers of inspection officers from Ministry of Works to inspect every single structure as it's being constructed.
Okay.
So our issue is really with compliance and not necessarily the code, though the code is currently being updated to apply, as I mentioned, these lessons learned from Dorian and other experiences. But the issue, the real issue is compliance.
Okay. So the real issue is compliance. All right.
And typically, so most of those homes on the Family Island, they've been built from 40s, 50s, 60s, and so
mm-hmm. that's another thing.
Yeah,
too,
and back then we didn't have the building codes were not
up
strong
to par.
Up to par like they were now. Like
okay,
now, so.
And it's obvious. Okay. Like when you go into these islands, as part of the damage and needs assessment team, right after the storms, as mm-hmm. Neil has, if I have, it's obvious that building codes were not complied with when you look at certain structures. But I think another lesson that we also need to start applying to is, I know that, you know, everybody wants these lovely coastal views, but we are really putting ourselves and our assets at risk, right? The idea is that we're trying to get people to understand, with understanding better their risk in being a small island development state and not really having much other options, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need to retreat as far in as possible, right? Reasonably possible. From the coast, we need to retreat from the coast as much as reasonably possible. And even with retreating, we need to increase the elevation of our structures.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the foundation or the
important.
Ground level needs to be significantly higher than
mm-hmm.
the surrounding ground. So
okay.
whether that is 3 feet or 6 feet, whatever it is that you can afford, because I'm not going to pretend like this is not going to, you know, impact
financial.
Your finances,
yeah.
right,
yeah.
in
uh-huh.
terms of the construction of your structures,
mm-hmm.
but we need to keep that in mind. That's very, very important, because think
okay.
about it. If the storm surge is coming and we say, you know, possibly in a category 2 storm, you could have storm surge 2 to 5 feet.
Mm-hmm.
If your foundation of your home, for example, is already at 6 feet, then you're not going to be as impacted by that storm surge as your neighbor who is building their foundation at the ground level.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that we need to consider moving forward. As Wayne explained, the
mm-hmm.
price tag on hurricane impacts is increasing, and I know our wages are not increasing at the same rate, but as we plan
right.
for the future, these
mm-hmm.
are the things that we really need to budget for. So if you are a person who's in the process now of, you know, looking for a home, even, or, you know, constructing one, consider how the topography is of your area.
Mm-hmm.
You can visit the area a few times before, after a rain event, see which areas flood, and you can sort of take lessons from there. What are some additional things you might need to make your home more secure?
Would it be possible to build it up or to reinforce it, so to speak, if you really have a heart to build in that particular area?
Yes, there are definitely things you can do. Absolutely, there are definitely things that you can do. The thing is, right, you need to be aware in the first place. A lot of people aren't aware, right? Just simply aren't aware. So get familiar with your neighborhood, the areas that flood. Take a look at your drainage systems around your area. Mm-hmm. Are they clean, right? Mm-hmm. If they're not, contact your local representative and try to get them cleaned, right? Because all of these are definitely going to impact your home.
Okay. What about persons who insist that they live, you know, in the coastal area, right? Because that's just their standard. That's what it is that they want. They've worked long and hard. And I want a view by the beach. I want to be able to come home and look at the ocean, right? What can they do when it comes to the structural integrity of their home or making any possible changes to what already exists, okay, as a present or current structure, and really being able to mitigate against possible damage from storms in the future?
I definitely say make sure you have hurricane clips, right, to attach your roof to your walls.
Okay.
Make sure you have hurricane impact windows and doors, all right? And for most people, especially if you recently bought or constructed a home on the beach, this should already be within your budget because it's not cheap, right, to build on the beach. There are already some structural considerations, special structural considerations that you would have to apply to the construction of your home or whatever the structure is. Mm-hmm. As we say, you know, from the Bible, right? The wise man builds his house upon the rock and the foolish man builds his house upon the sand. So we already know there's some extra things that you're going to have to do in order to make sure that you're structurally secure, all right?
Okay.
So make sure you have hurricane clips. Make sure you have hurricane impact windows and doors. Increase the elevation of your floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, just be safe, all right? If a major storm is coming, you would definitely want to leave your home, right? And retreat further inland. Because you don't want to be there. You don't want to take the risk of having to weather a storm at the front line, right? Yeah.
At the front line of the storm, right?
Mm-hmm. So we don't want, your life is important. Things can be replaced, lives cannot, you know? So...
Mm-hmm.
You're already taking that risk. Hopefully, you already understand the impact of taking that risk. And so we just need you to be safe, be as safe as possible.
Look, this question is for both of you. What are your thoughts on the possibility of constructing national hurricane centers throughout the length and breadth of the Bahamas? Of course, that's going to be, a huge undertaking financially, but of course, starting off on your more major islands like your Grand Bahama, like your New Providence, of course, and Abaco, this narrow building. And what are your thoughts on this? Because I see now, too, especially with the increase in the severity of the storms that you say that we will experience in the Bahamas, is not if, but when. Right?
Yeah.
And so, let's just say, God forbid, New Providence, Dorian, where are people going to go?
That's the problem we have. First of all, most islands in the Bahamas are low-lying. Most of them are below 25 feet. The highest we have is in Cat Island. Most of the islands are low-lying, so which means that we are already at a disadvantage. And in terms of hurricane shelters, you know, in the 1800s and the 1800s and early 1900s, the government back then, the British government, they actually built hurricane shelters. They still do it now in other countries like Bangladesh and India who experience major hurricanes. They have a huge, huge building and they have it strengthened in order of the area where the storms go, and they get everybody and put them in that building until the storm is over. And they used to do it in the Bahamas in the 1800s. Where they built a roof. The roof extended all the way to the ground. And if a storm came, it might blow, but it didn't, more than likely it didn't impact the roof itself. So many persons would go in those storm shelters. And they weathered the storm like that. Others went in caves and stuff, but most of them, the government built hurricane shelters, and one of them notable in Auckland, I'm told that's still there. But the ruins of it is still there. But
Okay.
It's a good idea to put put it in the center of the island, less impacted by the storm surge itself. And that would be a good idea to move them in. And I don't know if that's where an engineer like Kelly.
Yeah. I was just going to come to you now, Kelly, on your thoughts about that particular idea.
So two important lessons.
Yes.
So again, if you have the ability to retreat from the coastline, definitely do that. Even if you actually live in a home that's on the coastline, if you're being faced, presented with a threat of a major storm, make sure you move inland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you move inland and even at a higher elevation, that doesn't mean that you're safe and sound and all is well. There's no longer a threat, because even though there's a threat of flood at the coastline and at lower elevations, at higher elevations, you're also putting yourself in more exposure from wind.
That's
something that you also need to be aware
of. Take into consideration, yes.
But again, there's still things that we can do. We always have options, right?
Okay.
There was an interesting image that came out of Abaco of two homes, and they were of a very peculiar shape, right? That appeared to have withstood Hurricane Dorian while all of the homes around it.
Yeah.
Were destroyed, and they were circular in shape. And so when we think about physics and the dynamics of the interaction of wind in those homes, if you think about it, if the wind is coming from a certain direction and the walls of your house are facing that direction, you're getting the full impact of that wind on one wall of your house, right? As opposed to having a circular shaped home, the impact of that wind is not going to be concentrated on any one wall, because it'll be redirected around the structure.
Okay.
So that is simple physics, right?
Okay.
And that can definitely save, save you significant damage to your infrastructure. So let's think more dynamically. Let's think circular, right? Let's think, and of course, architectures can help you design these types of structures, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We have them at Braun as well, right? So Let's think about circular structures. Let's think about having more dynamic structures. Let's think about, unconventional shapes, right?
Yeah.
That would allow us to have better interactions with extreme wind and waves.
It should be incorporated into the building code.
Why not? Why not?
Just be a must, simply because we live in a hurricane belt.
I know when I interviewed Sir Clement Maynard, the late Sir Clement Maynard, he said, he was the MP for Yellow Elder.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, the reason why, there's several roundhouses in Yellow Elder to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, one of the reasons they were built for hurricanes.
Okay.
And he said, that was the reason why they were built round.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's what they did. The idea was that they were going to build more.
Mm-hmm.
But they got so much flak for it that they just stopped.
Because people don't think they're beautiful, I suppose.
But let's think about it. They can be made beautifully.
The original inhabitants of our islands lived in round huts. Why did we diverge from that? Clearly they knew what they were doing, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes. This is about saving lives here.
Absolutely.
So.
And then again, let's plant more trees, please. That seems so simple. And some people may even argue that's been my answer for everything. But I just want us to understand that's one of the most effective and inexpensive ways for us to lessen so many environmental threats.
Mm-hmm.
So by planting more trees around our homes, we also have another natural buffer to absorb some of that impact from the wind, breaking up some of that wind energy because of the surface area of the leaves on the trees and the branches.
That
will also help to protect your home.
Okay. It also lends to cultural diversity too, right? Because I can see, the mango tree. I can see the pear tree. I can see the plum tree. I can see all of that going on, right, in my yard. And then also it lends to health as well.
You got food for the storm.
Exactly, right? And it lends to, better health, as well.
Absolutely.
When you're eating, from the soil. And so it really plays, they really play into each other so very, very well. I don't want to end the show, though, without getting into this, because it's really got my attention, Ms. Kelly Armstrong, and that is you with the participating as a graduate research assistant, yes, positioned to study forecast-based disaster preparedness in the Caribbean with the Earth Institute's International Research for Climate and Society. Talk a little bit about your takeaways with this experience that could lend themselves to hurricane preparedness here in the Bahamas.
Absolutely. So one of the biggest lessons that I learned are that games can be a tool. Mm-hmm. So one of the useful exercises that we did with the team that I was a part of, which is the financial instruments sector team of mm-hmm. the International Research Institute for Climate and Society, IRI,
yes.
Was that we created games. We created mm-hmm. games to pull lessons from disaster managers based on their experiences with different disasters. Mm-hmm. We would basically use... present a bunch of different scenarios and just ask them how they would respond to these scenarios as disaster managers. What would be okay. some of the first things that they would do?
Mm-hmm.
If we had a variety of options, for example, what are some of the first things you would do? And then what would you do next? And then what would you do next? And why is this activity more critical than this activity? And from that, you actually get to learn a lot about the disaster management process and what things may be critical for one island and why, based on their characteristics as opposed to another. And so... that was very useful and fun. You get people engaged and you get to learn a lot. You get to have very fruitful discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you get to share with each other because remember, these activities are actually happening at regional conferences. So now you have that cross-cultural sharing,
yes,
right,
yes,
of experiences.
Yes.
And it's mm-hmm. really, really does build capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a very enriching experience.
Mm-hmm.
And also I was... a part of the financial instrument sector team, their claim to fame was actually designing index insurance schemes.
Mm-hmm.
So what they would do is they would use regional climate information and they would assist farmers in certain regions who may not necessarily have access to financial resources such as, you know, mainstream insurance policies.
Mm-hmm.
They would design them for them based on the climate patterns and trends in their area. So, for example, let's say you have a small village in West Africa,
mm-hmm.
And they have they're subject to floods as well as droughts.
Mm-hmm.
What they would do is they would take the climate data from that region and identify what we call climate windows, and those windows would basically be the basis of would be what we call triggers for payouts mm-hmm. by the insurance companies. So if you got
wow.
less than X, right.
That's
so if you got
good.
Right, if you got less than X amount of inches of rainfall, which the farmers through our workshops with them, they would identify as below normal rainfall for them
mm-hmm.
and where their crops would be unproductive,
mm-hmm.
you would let the insurance company know through your agreement that this any rainfall below this amount would trigger a payout for the mm-hmm. farmers because they would essentially be in a drought.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, on the higher end of the scale, if you got a certain amount of rainfall higher than Y inches of rainfall, that would trigger a flood and the crops would be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So you would also have that agreement with insurance companies to say, you know, this would also trigger a payout, any rainfall higher than Y.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very useful because, like I said, some small villages don't necessarily have access to these mainstream insurance policies.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to design that sort of financial security blanket for them to have access to financial resources should they have their crops fail in a situation due to mm-hmm. a climate extreme.
You know, Kelly, I hope, you know, it's my hope and my prayer that all of that wealth of information and knowledge that you would have gleaned from that experience, right, and that exchange is definitely being incorporated into policy here in the Bahamas. Okay?
Absolutely. So the conversation is definitely starting to be had because right now I'm not really sure. I can honestly say I'm not sure where the climate data comes from that is being used to inform insurance policies here
mm-hmm.
In the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my hope that, you know, through my work with Braun, that is something that we can expand into doing more research on.
Most definitely. Wonderful and insightful and very proactive conversation here today on influencers with influencers, climate ambassador Kelly Armstrong. A really great and wonderful insight. And also hurricane expert extraordinaire, meteorologist Mr. Wayne Neely. Y'all get ready to see him on YouTube, okay?
Absolutely.
So that's going to be it here for us today. The topic, the evolving demands of climate change and sustainability in the Bahamas and the Caribbean. I'm your host, Lady Shima. Until next time, blessings.
Influencers was brought to you by
7Seas. Start your day the right way. Soya Studios, located in the Flowers Plaza from Michael Road West. ACG Wholesale, with quality service and great prices. The Beauty Barn,
care and beauty supplies, delivering beauty products straight to your door. WhatsApp 242-812-8500. Real Time Sound Studios and Global Transformation Media, transforming you from the inside out.